It's been a while, but we have one, ladies and gentlemen. A retorts. Here it is.
Just the goalie interference call. Just what did you see there, and did you get any sort of...
Oh, for God's sakes. Who cares about that? My God. Just got the shit kicked out of us, and you're talking about a goaltender interference. Come on, Mark. I'm not trying to disrespect you. I don't care about that.
All right, so... I don't know. Help me understand, guys. When is it okay to talk about goalie interference? What has to happen in the game to ask Torts about goalie interference?
From his past, it may not matter because he doesn't seem to like to talk about controversial calls at all. He gets kind of irritated with it.
Mm-hmm. So the funny thing, I was watching NBC Sports this week, and I think that it was Anson Carter and Ryan Callahan were discussing how Torts handles things, you know, with his team. And Callahan was kind of giving him praise. He's like, you know, he really knows what buttons to push. He knows what to say to guys. So I think in this case, you know, the Blue Jackets are kind of struggling right now, so he'll probably back off a little bit. And then it was like the next night we get this from Torts.
That is a really good Torts, though.
It's a good one.
That is great retorts.
He really has been, like, at least in terms of headline-grabbing moments that he's, you know, had for press conferences, he's been a little under the radar the last, I'd say year plus. For a while, we were getting, like, a retorts every single week, and it's been a long time since we've had a really good one like this. So thank you, Torts, for finally getting a little bit of, you know, anger and getting ready to just take it out in the press for your team's poor play. I really appreciate it. Sound of Hockey episode 131. We're calling this one the Peter Mueller episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Peter Mueller. In 2012-2013, he had 131 shots on net.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And here's some amazing things about him. He was drafted 8th overall by the Phoenix Coyotes in 2006.
Let's go back. Ah, memories there.
And... Darren, I don't know if you know this. Who was he drafted out of?
Like, where was he playing when he was, like, 17?
Yes. Ooh. Yes.
Well, I know I played against him as a peewee, so I think he was...
Was he playing peewees at that time?
No, but because I remember we played against each other in... he played for Bloomington Jefferson, which was one of our kind of crosstown rivals. And it's now where my nephew plays, actually. Shout out to the peewee AA Jaguars finished... Yep, the Jags. They finished 4th in the state hockey tournament this weekend, so shout out to them.
Nice.
I don't know who would he have been playing for. I don't think he went on to play for Bloomington High School. I think he went somewhere else, but I don't remember where.
Well, he played for the National Team Development Program.
Oh. Okay.
But he was drafted when he was playing with the Everett Silvertips.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How about
that? So he didn't have, like, the illustrious career that you'd expect out of an 8th overall pick. 2012-2013, when he had all those shots on goal, 131 shots on goal,
was what an impressive stat.
Was his last year playing in the NHL. But I've just found out he's still playing in the Czech League. And... Oh. So he's only 32, so that makes sense. But for being out of the NHL for so long, I was surprised to see him playing. But he had 64 points in 46 games, which is pretty damn good.
That is pretty good.
Decent. I don't know how good the Czech League is, but he's still putting up points. So pretty cool to see that he's still at it.
Yeah. Hey, Jaromir Jagr plays in that league, so it's got to be pretty good.
Yeah. Hey, Darren.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that all the times he scored on you playing peewee hockey helped boost his confidence and ultimately led him to having a professional hockey career?
You know, I never said he scored on me. I don't know why you would just assume.
I just would assume.
I don't know why you'd assume
a guy
that.
In the Czech league and scoring or whatever he's doing now would probably have scored on you.
Hey, speaking of players that are still playing that you would probably look at it and say, oh, I didn't know that guy was still playing. Do you guys know Matt Molson is still playing in the AHL?
Yeah, because you put it on Slack earlier this week.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
The more you know.
You could have pretended there, Andy. You could have gone with the flow a little bit. But yeah, he's apparently the captain of the Hershey Bears. He's been, he played 2 years for the Ontario Reign, and he's played 2 years now for the Hershey Bears, and he's still kicking. So how do you like that? This is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on the Twitter.
And John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the Twitter.
And we are coming to you from Seattle / Lake Forest Park. Hey, we start with our reviews, of which we have three because we didn't have a full show.
Three.
last week. So for those that have been waiting on the edge of your seat to have your review read, sorry for the delay, but we appreciate your patience. So our first review comes from I Really Want Buffalo to Be Good. It's a 5-star review, and it says, Andy is right. Devo hey. Better get the goal song for the Kraken. I'm sure he's right about other stuff too, but mostly about Devo. Yeah, X22.
That might
is this one of your brothers?
No, they don't listen to the show.
What do you have to say for yourself here, Andy?
I think that's maybe the best review we've ever had.
Oh, okay.
That's my 5-star review of that review.
Yeah. Our next 5-star review comes from Nyan Alama. Now, that name rings a bell. I think this person has reviewed us before, so thank you for the second 5-star review, if I'm correct on that. It says, news, notes, and a lot of laughter. This is your ex post facto 5-star review of the week for the Sound of Hockey podcast. Each week, we learn about the goings-on in the Seattle Kraken organization, WHL updates, women's hockey, and for some odd reason, consistent banter surrounding the Minnesota Wild. The bits are great. The segments are fantastic, especially the weekly one-timers. Whoopsh. You'll laugh as the guys chirp each other while giving informative updates on all things hockey, produced in the Pacific time zone with frequent references to the Central time zone, all the while completely ignoring those of us living in the Mountain time zone. Great show, guys. Keep it up. P.S. I have no idea how to pronounce my username on iTunes, as it is clearly something that my kids somehow modified. Okay.
Always blame the kids.
Man. Yeah, it's always the kids' fault. That's how the you know, that Zoom call with the lawyer who was the cat, right? That's how that happened. Caused it. Anyway, and then their third review comes from DAVED734. Now, I'm not sure if that's just a slightly different way of spelling David, or if that's like Daved, like you just got Daved, right?
Oh, I like that. Could I like be that.
Sound of Hockey is the name of it. Very clever. It says, it is one of the highlights of my week when I see a new episode available. You guys really put the sounds in the Sound of Hockey. I feel Andy with his sound effects is a blossoming Fred Norris from the Howard Stern Show. Thanks for the great content and keep up the good work. Now, I have...
Yeah, my sound effects are probably the best thing I do. That's my best work, the sound effects.
That's what you bring to the table.
It's on my first thing on my resume.
Mm-hmm. I really hate to burst this person's bubble, but the whoopsh sound effect is neither Andy nor myself. It actually is John that makes that sound effect. So, you know what just happened there? That Dave person that did Dave. That review, he got Daved. So, boom.
No, we need a sound effect for that.
Yeah, we'll think about it. We'll workshop it. Thank you very much to all three of you for those great reviews. Those were fun,
awesome.
We always enjoy getting those. Leave your 5-star review if you haven't before, and we'll read it on next week's show, as long as you put it on iTunes and as long as it's 5 stars. Let's chat a little bit about the content that we've had on soundofhockey.com, of which there's been a lot and of which has been good. Recent story that we had on the site as of the recording of this podcast was my own story about an NHL prospect that the Everett Silvertips have in Olin Zellweger. Now, I actually got to go to the Silvertips game this past week. Thanks to the Silvertips for having me. There are very few people allowed in. I will tell you what, going into Angel of the Winds Arena, which is a pretty huge rink, and just seeing nobody in the stands is quite odd. And it's interesting because they still do all the light shows and the announcers there yelling stuff and they still do the horn and everything. But then there's just no one there. There was a very funny moment early in the game where it was like, you know, the announcer said something like, it's time to drop the puck. And like, there were a few people up at the very top near the press box that were like, woo, that was it. So it's an interesting experience, but it was good to get out and see a hockey game.
What's the intermission show like?
It is not much. They don't have much that they do. There's a couple of big machines that come out and drive around in circles on the ice. And then
Did you win the Chuck-a-puck?
I did not. I didn't even enter. So, but anyway, it was great to see some high level hockey though. Olin Zellweger, get to know him. I wrote all about him and, he is a smooth skating defenseman, very fun to watch. And I think he's going to have a good chance of getting drafted here. So, you can read about him. Also while I was there, I kept an eye on friend of the pod, Dustin Wolf, who had 3 straight shutouts to open the, season. He's actually, I believe, 3 shutouts away from tying the WHL career record for shutouts. So that's pretty good. He looks very, very confident since coming back from the AHL, and I pity the fool that has to try to score a goal on him, because he is he's a very, very good goalie, at least at this WHL level.
He has had 1 goal scored on him.
That's true.
The other 101 shots were stopped.
Mm-hmm.
that he's faced, but he did give up a goal to Simon Knack of the Portland Winterhawks.
Yeah.
Broke the streak.
Yep. Very disappointing, but it is what it is, and chances are he will get a couple more shutouts this season, so we'll see what happens if he can reach that record. And then, Andy, I know you had, speaking of WHL, you had the oral history of the Thunderbirds championship season, which I want to go out on a limb here and say I think it's my absolute favorite piece that we've had on soundofhockey.com so far.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's just part one, so there's more mm-hmm. coming.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It was fun. It's been fun to. I started this in the summer, and then just the season started, things got crazy. So I kind of haven't been sitting there in my computer for a while. It was fun talking to those guys. You know, I covered that team the first time around. It was fun catching up with those guys. You know, guys like Ethan Bear, Keegan Kolesar, and Scott Enzer, and all that crew. It was just kind of fun hearing their side of things and what they were going through during that season.
And, you know, while we're talking about the WHL, why don't you give us a WHL update? Our WHL correspondent, Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
Hello. The WHL is back, especially here in the Northwest. Some rumor has it that even Darren Brown went to a WHL game.
Yeah,
And the games have been on TV. Don't forget to mention that. That's been pretty cool to see him on TV.
Yeah, there have been four of the first five Seattle Thunderbird games have been on TV, one against Spokane, the other against Portland. There's been some issues with the CHL TV feed, so if you have Joe TV, or if you're in Portland, you have CW, you've been able to see a bunch of games. I know Tri-City and Spokane are also televising a lot of games. So there are other ways of finding it without having to rely on that glitchy, we'll call it glitchy, CHL TV.
Weren't you singing the praises of how much they've improved that this season?
Well, I was singing the praises about how it can't be worse than the previous system, but I now stand corrected. I now stand corrected because turns out it can be worse than the previous service.
That stinks.
Yeah, they're having some issues, which I'm sure they're trying to figure out, but it has been problematic. I've only had to experience once just because I've been able to go to the games, and also like Darren experienced an empty arena.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun because you can hear hear each bench, you know, call offsides. You can hear each bench call penalty. You know, you don't need the refs anymore. Just let the benches do it.
Yeah.
Like everyone screams and, you know, that's offsides.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do, definitely. And you know when things are starting to heat up on the ice, which is interesting because all of a sudden you just hear a lot more voices. You're like, what's going on? And then you realize that there's two or three guys up on each bench and they're shouting at each other. And I know we were just talking about our Sound of Hockey content. John, you had a little data piece about penalties that are called and when they're called in games. And that was sparked by a little something that happened last week, which was Peelgate, as we're calling it. So Tim Peel was caught on a hot mic. Here is what he said.
It wasn't much, but I wanted to get a fucking penalty against Nashville early in
the... And so the internet reacted by saying, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. This proves that the NHL and the refs are all just, you know, managing the game, and they have like this plan in mind, and everything is rigged and blah blah blah. Something has to happen. The following day, the NHL put out a statement saying that Tim Peel was effectively fired and would never work another NHL game. And then the internet reacted by saying, oh my God, I can't believe they did this to Tim Peel. This is horrible. I can't believe they did this, which was interesting.
Yeah.
My take on it, I will give you my take if you guys care to hear it. Do you care to hear my take?
I do care to hear it. I do would like to hear it. Yes.
Okay. So in that case, I'll share it. So my take is that
you're very formal this week.
Tim Peel, you know, I never thought he was, well, I thought he was a fine ref, although I feel like he got a pretty bad rap because Greg Wyshynski had this like ongoing campaign against him as a referee. Yes. And so I think he kind of got under the microscope. And then every time he made a bad call, it became really like it blew up a lot because of that. You know, he's a veteran guy. He was retiring after the season. And every referee in the NHL, in college, in every youth league, they do what they have to do to manage the game. And that is a fact of life. And if you don't want that to be the case, then you need to change the way that you train your referees and tell them to call it as they see it. And whatever happens, if there's a penalty late in the game or whatever it is, you call the penalty. It doesn't matter the situation, doesn't matter which team is leading. That's what has to happen. But that's not what happens, right? And so the only crime that Tim Peel committed here is he talked about the exact thing that every other referee on the planet does, and it happened to be in front of a microphone, and he got fired for it. And that kind of sucks. I feel really bad for him. He, like I said, he was on his way out. He was going to retire after this season, so now he doesn't get to do that. He has to, you know, get fired in his last season.
He was going to retire like in a month. I don't even think he was going to finish the season. Like they did this with, he had just a couple games left on his schedule, which kind of sucks. So he didn't get his goodbye. I kind of agree with you though. I think if you've watched hockey, you know this happens. You know If one team gets three power plays in the first period, you know the next one's coming against the other team. You know, the other team's going to get one. And that's kind of how it's been. I struggle with this because rationally, I think a penalty should be a penalty, right? That just makes sense on the surface. Just, like, yeah, if it's a penalty, it's a penalty. If it's in the rule book, it should be in the rule book. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I don't know that that is what we all want. I don't think we want 15 power plays in a game, which we might have. Nope. That just ruins the flow of the game. It really drags it down. And you know, refereeing is hard. I kind of cut these guys a little bit of slack here. Things are moving so fast. Things are going to get missed. Sometimes that game management also keeps things from getting out of hand and having even worse things happen. So I kind of just, I'm okay with leaving it the way it's been.
Yeah. And you know, there's so many instances out there where they'll like have referees mic'd up for a game and they'll cut out a bunch of clips. And you see the things that they're having to like say and do with these players. You know, and they're like getting into arguments constantly, and they're, you know, the fact that they're able to get through an individual NHL game is shocking, let alone, you know, however many games they ref in a season. It's just BS that he got canned. You know, one thing that comes to mind when I was a squirt coach for one season, and I know it very much is similar to anything that happens in the NHL.
Same stakes.
Yeah. Every time that there was a bad call that went against us, and it was one of those where it was like, okay, that was obviously a bad call, the ref would skate by the bench, and the thing that I would say is, all right, you owe us one now. And every single time we got the next call, like every time, like I don't think it failed once during the entire season. If a bad call went against us, I said that to the ref, and the next time we got the call. So I'm just saying, like, these guys are human. You know, they are trying to make sure that it's fair and that neither team feels like they're getting cheated or ripped off. Mm-hmm. And it is what it is. And if you want to change it, then you have to change it on a league level. Don't make one guy make it seem like he's the whole reason, right? That's my soapbox. John, what did the data say about penalties getting called and when they get called in games?
So the data was pretty consistent with what you would think based on what we think happens, where refs kind of manage the game. They don't want to decide a game, so they, quote unquote, put the whistle away.
Mm-hmm.
It's tricky because each scenario needs to kind of be spelled out and then isolated. The data needs to be isolated. So in a tie game, how often does a penalty be called? And then versus a two-goal differential game. And the data clearly shows that there's less penalties called when the game is tied. And same for a one-goal game, particularly in the third, it drops significantly. So I'm going to spell out a couple numbers. And so what this is the penalties per 60. So per 60 minutes in this scenario during this period. So if you add up a bunch of games that have this scenario. So for example, so in the first period, when there's a tie game, the number of penalties per 60 minutes of game played while the game's tied is 3 penalties per 60 minutes, okay? In the third period, it's 2.4 penalties per game. It's a significant drop when it's tied in the third period. And you could even break it down by minute of the third period. And like we've always heard kind of the announcers say, they're putting the whistles away, letting the players play. That bears in the data. Now, there is context about, well, do offsetting penalties count or fightings, like all those kind of things that kind of is opportunity for further analysis. But the data kind of implies that what we all think, you know, and nobody's getting fired for it. So I totally agree with your take, Darren. And I liked your comments in the weekly one-timer post last Friday. I thought it was a great assessment of the situation because people, like you said, were on both sides of the fence. Like, they got to do something. And then they're like, there's no way.
Too much. You can't do that.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, and I agree. I kind of like how they manage it.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I think it's a tough job. I don't really have too many complaints about referees. We have the luxury of replays and slow-mo replays. And then, oh yeah, it's obvious that was a penalty. And that's like, well, the game happened so quick. I'm surprised that they get it so right most of the time.
I mean, how many times do you watch a game and an obvious high stick to us watching on TV goes uncalled? Well, the referees on the ice have all kinds of things going in front of them, you know, flashing in front of them, and sometimes it's away from the puck, and everyone gets mad. Like, how could they not have seen that high stick? Because it's so consistently missed that, yeah, that's why, because there's so much going on. There's just two of them, and you know, it's chaos on the ice, and they're going to miss things like that.
Yeah, and I mean, they have to be looking in the direction of the penalty.
Exactly.
Right? Like sometimes they're not looking that way. Yeah,
sometimes
so,
the puck has already left that area. Yeah. Same stakes.
Anyway, there's a lot of humanity involved in refereeing, and that's some context that I think people need to realize. And frankly, as much as people dump on referees in the NHL, like, that has to be a very, very hard job to get things right, like with the speed that things move. So anyway, enough about that. Let's never talk about refereeing again. The trades that went down here as we lead up to the trade deadline, which we've been teasing that it's just around the corner for like over a month now. But a few trades have actually started to trickle in. So Alexander Volkov went from the Tampa Bay Lightning to the Ducks for something called Antoine Morand, who is going back the other way. Is that interesting or carry on, gentlemen?
I think that's kind of interesting because Volkov is a pretty decent player. I thought he was on the Kraken radar in Tampa, but Tampa's pretty stacked. Now he goes to a team that doesn't have necessarily an obvious selection. I think there's a couple defensemen available for Anaheim that the Kraken may consider, but I like Volkov. He's younger. And so I tend to index younger. So that is interesting.
Okay. Eric Staal to the Canadiens for a third and a fifth round draft pick. Interesting or carry on?
Well, just interesting in that the Eric Staal era in Buffalo has come to a glorious end.
And I love Eric Staal. I'd love to see him win a cup. Honestly.
I think it was pretty funny that he had a no trade clause, and there's something like, are you sure you want to waive that move, that no trade clause to get out of Buffalo?
Now he'll get to play in the playoffs most likely. So
yes, and I also saw a pretty funny tweet where it was like Eric Staal looking really ragged in a picture with the Buffalo Sabres next to Eric Staal looking a little bit more well kempt in his new jersey with the Canadiens, and it said Eric Staal over the Buffalo one, and then over the Canadiens one it said Eric Staal, but with an accent on the E. That's good stuff.
That took
me a long time to explain that, but I think that was the only way that I could get the point across without just showing it to you.
It was worth it.
Thank you. And then the third one, Brendan Lemieux to the LA Kings for a fourth round pick. Interesting or carry on?
Slightly interesting, only in that Lemieux was a guy who was probably going to be exposed to the Kraken from the Rangers, and there isn't much there and from the Rangers. Not that he was any great shakes either. But that's just one name now that might be off the list. We'll see what happens with him in LA. I guess he could still be an option there.
LA could make some trades where it kind of creates an opportunity for him to be protected. But, you know, he's not a great pickup for the Kraken if they were to select him. But he's in there. He's in the range.
Hey, you're right, though. Like, the Rangers do not have much to choose from. So the pickings there get even slimmer with Brendan Lemieux going away. Yeah. Okay, we got to talk about college hockey because there was a lot of it over the last week and a half, and it's been incredible. Let's start on the women's side since the women's tournament happened first, and that one is totally completed now. So the Badgers, my Wisconsin Badgers, win back-to-back titles. I believe that was their sixth NCAA women's title. They beat the Northeastern Huskies 2-1 was the final. John, what were your thoughts on this one?
Oh, it was a great game, man. It showcased really well. It was on ESPN, like we've been talking about. Kind of a fluky goal at the end. It essentially bounced off someone's skate. Somebody was centering the puck from behind the goal line, bounced off a defender's skate, and kind of went in top shelf in overtime. And you can imagine how devastating that is because you see it go off your skate and it goes right into the net and you're like, our season's over. We lost. You know, it's one thing if it happens in the third or the second where you're like, okay, we still have time to kind of tie this up. Yeah, but it was an awesome game. I just love competitive games, and I was on the edge of my seat for that one.
So Erin Frankel was the netminder for Northeastern. She wins the Patty Kazmaier Award as the best player in the nation. Love seeing those kinds of awards go to goalies because they're usually the most deserving. But
what?
Not only are they usually the most deserving, but I think that in this case, it is very, very true. In 23 appearances, Frankel went 22-1 with a .965 save percentage and a, you ready for this? 0.81 goals against average in 23 appearances. appearances.
That's pretty decent.
In those 23 games, she had 9 shutouts. So that is something. Those are numbers that you do not see very often. In fact, I don't know that I've ever seen numbers that good at pretty much any level. Pretty incredible.
But Darren, doesn't that mean that the 5 players in front of her were really good?
I mean, yes. I would agree with that.
If the goal is the fault of the 5 players in front of the goaltender. Isn't their success also then predicated on the 5 players?
To some degree, yes. But you still need to make the saves that you're expected to make. And a 965 save percentage, I mean, that tells you that she made a lot of the saves out of the opportunities that she had. So pretty incredible numbers nonetheless. Even if she's playing behind a good team, those are incredible numbers, and you can't deny that.
No, I'm just trying to make fun of goals. Okay. That's all I'm trying to do.
All right, fair enough. I accept.
Is that fair?
I think so. Okay, so then on the men's side, where do we even want to start? Do we start with the 5 overtime game? Do we just start with main course? Is that what we do? Okay.
Yeah.
So UND versus UMD, which is a little confusing, but it's North Dakota versus Minnesota Duluth. They went to 5 overtimes. It was the longest game in NCAA tournament history. That's on men's or women's side. Some of the highlights that I recall, and I will say I did not watch the entire game, but I saw everybody tweeting about it. I'm like, oh God, triple overtime. I better click over and watch this to see who wins. And then I ended up still watching it like 2 hours later. I was like, holy crap, this is a long game. So the starting goalie for UMD, Zach Stayskull, freshman who had only played 7 games, he cramps up in the 5th overtime and he gets replaced by Ryan Fanti, who apparently is kind of the regular starter there. So why Scott Sandelin went with Zach Stayskull, I'm not exactly sure, other than it must have just been like a gut feeling that Stayskull was playing better. And you know, it worked out. Fanti came in after sitting on the bench for 5 hours, made a few like really huge saves, and had a part in the win. Wyatt Kaiser, who's an 18-year-old freshman and a pick of the Blackhawks. You guys want to know how much ice time he had? Pretend you don't know, because I know you have the show notes in front of you.
Tell
59
us,
minutes. 59 minutes of ice time, which is pretty incredible. I kind of wish he would have gotten at least one more minute for the full 60.
Yeah.
So, you know, just ridiculous stuff. And, I mean, the goal comes from a freshman who had, like, hardly played at all season. Just awesome stuff. Very, very cool. You only get that in the NCAA tournament.
A pretty significant upset too, right? I think a lot of people thought North Dakota was going to win this thing if they had all the horses. And so kind of a bracket buster, if you
yes,
will.
Yes, definitely a bracket buster.
Except UMD is also a 2-time champion, so I'm not sure that should be that big of a surprise. But yes, your point is correct. So Saturday I watch nonstop hockey,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it started this week with the NWHL on one TV. And then I, you know, I would have the T-Birds or the Toronto Maple Leafs on the other TV. And
just
you just kind of shift around based on the situation. But I didn't start watching this game until there was two or three minutes left in the third. And at the time, North Dakota was down by 2 goals. And mm-hmm. so I got to see him tie it up. I'm like, great, this is going to be awesome. It's going to go overtime. And then I watched every single minute of that, of those 5 overtimes. Even started drinking coffee at about 10 p.m. I'm like, this might be a long night. So it ended around 10:30 or 10:45. But I was like, oh my God, I'm so tired. And I'm like, wait, it's only 10:30 where these guys have been playing hockey for 6 hours and they're still going strong. I'm like, I got to do it. I got to do it for them. I got to stay up and watch this thing through.
Yeah, and it's 10:30 Pacific time, which, John, you know the central time zone as well as anybody, right? So it's after midnight for them at that point. So
North Dakota Central?
Yes.
I wasn't sure if they were mountain or central.
No, yeah, they're central.
Well, I didn't want to forget about that mountain time mm-hmm. zone.
It was amazing how long this game went. Like, I worked the Thunderbirds game and just assumed there'd be no hockey for me to watch by the time I got home. And then my brother started texting me. He's like, it's double overtime in this college game. And then I thought, yeah, but I'm just now wrapping up. By the time I get home, it'll still be over. And he's like, that was the third overtime. And so I was able to watch the last overtime and a half by the time I got home. I just couldn't believe it was still, there was still hockey on.
Yeah. So other highlights from other games, we got to talk about Ryan Sandelin, who gets a game winner in the opening game for Minnesota State. Minnesota State has never won a game in the NCAA tournament, so he gets the overtime winner. The interesting thing about that is that that name may ring a bell because, yes, he is Scott Sandlin's son. So the coach of UMD now has a chance to face his son in the NCAA title game if they both win in the first round of the Frozen Four, which would be really kind of
crazy. What's the story there? Like, how did he end up going to Mankato?
I don't know, but, I wonder because I think there's probably some parents out there that are just like, no, you don't want to be the coach's kid. You know, go learn from somebody else. Or maybe it was the kid that was just like, I don't want to be the coach's kid, right? I want to go play for somebody else.
Yeah, so, that's pretty cool. Pretty
coach amazing. Hastings from Minnesota State, I know, has a great reputation too. He was the coach of the junior team that came out to Everett a couple years ago with Jack Hughes. So we get to meet him briefly. But it's just been such a fun tournament to watch so far. And so now, you know, we have the Frozen Four coming up next weekend. But, you know, and that's even with a couple of teams having to pull out at the last second because of COVID. Notre Dame, Michigan, even St. Lawrence was supposed to get in. They got replaced by Notre Dame, and then Notre Dame had to pull out of the tournament. So it's been awesome. You know, even with teams that have gotten to like sneak past, so like UMD, for example, they only had to win one game to get the Frozen Four. Well, it was a pretty tough game that they had to win because it so happens that it was the longest game in NCAA tournament history. So they got their money's worth. So the final four teams now going to Pittsburgh are UMD, University of Massachusetts, which is interesting that they're returning because we remember that Cale Makar was the big star, you know, two seasons ago. He's not there anymore. And then you have St. Cloud State, which they're like a team of seniors, no real superstars on that team necessarily, but they have the age. And then Minnesota State, who, like I said previously, had never won an NCAA tournament game at all. So pretty cool field that they have set up there. And it has been so much fun to watch. I can't wait for the Frozen Four, which is coming up next weekend. We should talk about the NWHL. John, you mentioned briefly that you were watching it this weekend. Your Boston Pride, your favorite team, lifts the Isabel Cup. What's your reaction?
It was awesome, man. It was so incredible to see the game, the women's game on NBC Sports, right? Getting the full production, full investment. It looked like a regular game, you know, with the regular lighting, regular camera angles. AJ Maleska was on the color for the game. She was incredible. And it showcased the game really well. It was pretty dramatic. Minnesota is a really good team. The Whitecaps are a really good team. But Boston is a really good team as well. And they were supposed to face each other in the final last year before it got called because of COVID. So it was kind of cool to see them match up again for the cup this year. And Boston was up 3-1 with about 2 minutes left when somebody committed a 5-minute major, you know, 2.5 minutes left. You know, she goes off to the box and then they're like, well, there's only 2 minutes left in the game, so you got to go to the locker room. I was feeling for that woman so much because she's just like, knowing they're so close, she just put her team on a penalty kill for as long as it goes. You know, hopefully they can kill it. And then Minnesota scored one right away. So then it was like high drama the last 45, 50 seconds where they were hanging on for dear life and they pulled it off. So it was like this really dramatic moment for women's hockey on the national stage. So it was a great event, great game. I was kind of bouncing up and down at the end because I was so nervous for that woman who committed the penalty and the team itself. It was awesome. It showcased the game. I really hope we see more pro women's hockey on TV because it is a great experience to see that happen.
Agreed that it would be really, really great to see it more frequently on national TV. And, you know, I do hope that one day the NWHL and those that are playing in the GAP tour can come together and make something that's a little bit more broadly appealing and more sustainable. So because it is great. It really is great. And when it gets the national stage, they never disappoint. So it's time to move on to our bits. And our bit is Sound of Hockey's 3 stars.
Never makes me not laugh. Mm-hmm.
Andy, what's your bit? Your 3-star, your star, your bit star.
My star is an up-and-coming youngster named Sidney Crosby. Okay. Who plays for the Pittsburgh?
Never heard
Penguins.
Of the guy.
Okay.
Yeah, he's there's a lot of buzz about him. He could turn into something. he tonight, when we're recording this, had a goal and assist. That's 2 points. And in doing so, he extended his point streak to 6 straight games with a point. He has 12 points overall over that streak, which is 2 points per game, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And the pesky Pittsburgh Penguins are 2 points away from first place in the Mass East.
The Mass Hole Mutual. You know,
yeah.
I feel like John and I get pretty creative with our picks in the three stars. Like, we come up with a fun reason to make somebody a three star. I feel like you go with somebody who just, like, has a lot of points, Andy. Yeah, I think you're a little too literal with your three stars, if I'm giving some feedback.
When I picked Barry Trotz as a star, I got grief for it. So what is it that you guys want from me here?
That's true. That's a pretty good rebuttal. Pretty good rebuttal. All right, John, your star of the week.
Rocco Grimaldi. Okay. From the
so
National
creative,
Predator.
Man. So creative.
That is creative because a couple reasons. He had 5 points in his last three games, including 4 assists in one game. You know, so maybe not the top scorer of the week, but Rocco Grimaldi could and should be exposed by the Nashville Predators. He's another Californian, which I tend to love, but I like that he's could be exposed. And Nashville Predators, all of a sudden, you know, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about trade bait and who's going to be traded. And we were talking about Matthias Ekholm as being like top of the list because they're going to be trading. They're rebuilding, whatever. They're all of a sudden in playoff position because they've gone on a tear. Uh-huh. And Grimaldi's part of that. So the Predators are somehow in the playoff picture and might not be selling these guys anymore, which is good for the Kraken because that means they need to hold on, and they can only protect so many. They've got some depth that would be really advantageous for the Kraken.
I like it. I did not know that Rocco Grimaldi is from California, but that makes a lot of sense because his name is Rocco Grimaldi. Mackenzie Blackwood is my star of the week. Speaking of people with interesting names, Mackenzie Blackwood. So he had a 40-save shutout against the Boston Bruins, a 1-0 win. What was most impressive about it is I think he probably had save of the year. It was in the very closing seconds of the game to preserve his 1-0 win. The puck was kind of trickling towards the line. It went more than halfway over the line, like just a fraction of the puck was still touching the goal line. And Mackenzie Blackwood did a full split and kicked the puck off of the line. And it was like, man, it was an unbelievable save. Like, this thing could not have gotten any closer to going over the line without going in. And that was how they ended up winning the game. So Mackenzie Blackwood is my star of the week. I can tell you guys with a lot of confidence, if it were me in that goal crease, I would not have made that save.
Well, Mackenzie Blackwood is 6'4", and if he was 6'3", he doesn't make that
save. I'm only 6'3 and a half, so I don't think I would have...
I think that really depends on whether or not he has like a long torso or a short torso or long legs. He could still have baited. Mm-hmm.
John, why did you laugh when I shared my height on the podcast?
I wasn't laughing. Mm-hmm. I was laughing at Andy for claiming he doesn't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
We now move from our bits to our segments, and our segment is You Don't See That Every Day. Or You Don't See That Every Day is a circle back to the NCAA tournament. Now, this one comes from St. Cloud's opening game against Boston University. So, comically, they played Boston University and then Boston College in their route to the Frozen Four. But this was a play that I certainly have never seen before. Not only do you not see it every day, I don't think I've ever seen it before. So the St. Cloud player is kind of getting taken down in the corner. And as he's going down, he must like scoop the puck up on his stick almost. And it deflects off the boards, flies 30 feet in the air, lands right on the stick of another player for St. Cloud who like has enough time to dust it off and fire it into an open net before anyone realizes he has the puck. So literally the goalie is like looking into the corner, the opposite direction. And at that point, the puck is already past him in the net. It is something that, like I said, I have never seen that before.
You know what that reminds me of, that play, is when Kevin Bieksa beat the Sharks in the Western Conference Finals.
Oh, I remember that.
And a puck that went off the stanchion. I mean, a crazy bounce off the stanchion, and nobody knew where it was. And I think everybody in the ice, except for Kevin Bieksa, was looking for it in the corner, and he scored. He just knocked it in the net. Mm-hmm. So very similar.
John, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, I remember that. Thanks. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, but who won the game tonight, John?
Great, Andy. Appreciate it. You know, this came up.
I think he's trying to stir something up because it's Monday night that we're recording and the Wild played the Sharks tonight and the Sharks beat the Wild. I think that's what's happening. No, Am I right about that?
I brought up what has to be a painful memory to John of when they came that close to the Stanley Cup.
We weren't planning on bringing this up, but didn't you send a message to Darren when Wisconsin was losing their game?
I did. I asked why.
Aaron, how does that make you feel? When what was the message? It was like, why does Wisconsin lose?
Yeah,
it was down 1-0.
It didn't make me feel good, Andy. It really didn't.
And how did it go from there, though? It got better, right?
Well, they still lost. No, I mean, they got back in the game, but they still lost. But you know, this is crappy. This is a crappy thing for you to do. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is the kind of thing that gets you banned from John's house.
So he's already been banned.
We're playing with house money now.
That's
Darren.
A good point. Yeah.
Darren, you're number one. Andy's number two on my list, my ban list.
Okay.
So what was it? It was like who you didn't want to watch a game about a team with a team you care about it with, right? Isn't that the?
Yeah, that I mean, a meaningful game. Meaningful game. I don't want to. If I have a vested interest, I don't want to watch with either of you. I know that sucks, and maybe that's mean, but dude, it emotionally pisses me off, right?
Well, my crime was that I was having too much fun. It's like Tim Peel all over again.
I don't want to take away from your fun.
All he's doing is just the same thing he does every time he watches a game. You know, he just makes calls and tells people why he's making the calls. Somebody hears him and gets upset. Right. I do the same thing. I watch a game. Yep. I crack some jokes. I say, oh, that kind of sucks. Oh, here comes a goal. Sure enough, I was right. There's the goal. And then John's all pissed off because that goal comes against his beloved San Jose Sharks. Well, you know what,
well,
buddy?
No, you're laughing and having a good time at an when I'm emotionally drained and like upset. Yeah, I'm vulnerable.
Yes,
I'm vulnerable and you're laughing and having a good time. We'll have to see. I mean, we could probably watch a Kraken game
together. At least we'll be vested in favor of the same team.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's where it's going to be a little different.
The Wild are having a good season and probably going to play some big games here in the playoffs. So you have a chance.
Well, no, I'm not. That's not my style, man. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to. I would never send a message like, hey, why are your Badgers suck or whatever?
I did not say suck. I said, why are they losing?
It was not very subtle.
I was concerned. Yeah.
That was a dig. There was no like, you weren't really asking a question.
I was concerned.
No, you weren't. Now, don't try to sugarcoat this because we should probably get off this topic.
But speaking of,
I will never do that to you, Darren, intentionally. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the Wisconsin Badgers, we now move on to our weekly one-timers. And our first weekly one-timer. Cole Caulfield has decided to leave the Wisconsin Badgers, which is sad for me, but good for him. He signs with the Montreal Canadiens, and he closes out his final season. I guess he played 2 years with the Badgers. He closes out his sophomore year with 30 goals in 31 games. Crazy. So that's pretty impressive, though. I mean, there are not too many players over the years that I think can align with those kinds of numbers. We'll see what happens at the pro level. That doesn't always translate, but people certainly have high hopes for him in Montreal.
Fun player to watch, I'll tell you that. It's lots of speed and skill.
Yes. And he can score, which is useful. Our next weekly one-timer.
Usually.
The government of Canada recognized that some of their teams needed some help, and so they relaxed their quarantine restrictions. What's the latest from north of the border, John?
Well, they lowered the quarantine period from 14 days down to 7. And what this does is it really enables the teams to make trades, which was actually a kind of a hindrance for them to make trades. And coincidentally, the next day after they announced that, Eric Staal gets traded to Montreal from obviously an American city.
Yeah,
shocker. So I don't know what people feel on this. I think it's probably a safe bet that all the NHLers are kind of taking precautions and taking this pretty seriously. So I don't think the risk of lowering it from 14 days to 7 days is that significant, but I'm okay if people have an issue with that because I don't think there should always be preferential treatment just because you play hockey. So that's my take.
Yep.
That was the weirdness for me. It was just like, they're just doing this for the hockey. They're just doing it for hockey, right? Not regular folk, right?
That's right.
You still have 14 days if you're just a guy.
Yep.
So that,
I mean, it really does feel as if maybe like the Toronto Maple Leafs are like, hey, we really want to swing a trade, but we kind of can't because.
But there's no Canadian players we like, so we need to go to the American team.
America.
Listen, have you ever tried to do business with Brad Tree Living? You know, I can't do that. So, our next weekly one timer. Speaking of rule changes because certain owners weren't getting their way, the draft lottery has been changed. How, Andy?
Well, they made some changes in the number of balls and draws and all that kind of stuff. First, he can only win the lottery twice in 5 years, mm-hmm. which I feel is maybe aimed at the Edmonton Oilers. But
retroactively.
The other significant thing they did was reduce the number of lottery draws down from 3 to 2, which limits how far up a team can go who may not be the worst team, if that makes sense.
So what you're saying is there's more incentive to tanking now. Am I correct?
Sure.
Well, kind of, right? Yeah. Because like the lottery thing was all kind of supposed to be a way to stop people from tanking, because you think about like the Buffalo Sabres, right? Like they very much should have won the McDavid draft, mm-hmm. but they didn't. The Oilers won it, and so they got Eichel instead. But I remember they were all pissed off because like, well, we tanked and we didn't get the first pick, and now we're upset about it. So now there's like less movement that can happen. So in theory, there's a little bit more incentive. Not a lot, just a little bit more incentive to tank, because it's less likely that you're going to get moved down a bunch. So that's just something that jumped to my mind.
Yeah, I wonder, when I first saw this, I'm like, why are they doing this? Is this really needs to be fixed or tweaked this much? You know, I'm fine with overhauling the lottery, but this isn't doing much, right? Yeah. And what's the real benefit of doing this? Just in case. I wonder if these teams are thinking so far ahead, or the league is thinking so far ahead, that they realize that there's like some really good prospects coming down the pipe, like Connor Bedard and Matthew Savoy. I don't know how good Matthew Savoy is, but those guys are going to be really good. Maybe there's enough kind of insight on how those draft looks that they know people are going to tank for them. Because, you know, if you tank this year, it's not worth it. There's a math equation that, you know, what kind of revenue you're going to lose for tanking versus picking up the number one overall, right? But this year, and we talked about it with Chris Peters, last best friend of the pod, last episode, that there isn't like that blue chip
that one person
player this year compared to there was even this previous draft. But I don't know if this what this does, right? It's fun to argue about and talk about, but at the same time, like, is this even going to play out in any kind of meaningful way? Who knows?
Will we notice it? Could they have done this without us noticing it?
Well, I mean, we might notice it when they pick up the New York Rangers ball and it's clearly weighs way more than all the other balls.
Yeah, and that Minnesota ball just gets almost in the tube.
Yeah, but you know, nothing like that has ever happened before. So that's just, you know, making it up as I go here. Our next weekly one-timer. Patrick Marleau. Oh, we got some Sharks content. Okay, wonder who put that on there. He's the second in NHL history in games played. I guess that's kind of a big deal. So he now trails only Gordie Howe. He surpasses Mark Messier in games played. Is that good?
Decent.
You know, he is projected to pass Gordie Howe this season. Do you guys think he's got a case to be in the Hall of Fame?
Ooh.
Patrick Marleau?
I've never thought about it. I can honestly say, very, very honestly, I've never thought about that, John.
How many goals? He has over 500 goals?
He's got 564 goals, 630 assists, and that's regular season, obviously. So,
I mean, that's a pretty good case, I think. I think he has a shot at that.
It's a decent case. Yeah. I've never thought of him, though, as like one of the best players in the league, ever. Like, even when he was kind of at the top of his game, I always felt like he was a good player on a good team. But I never felt like he was like the real top notch around the league. And that's kind of who I think of for Hall of Fame players. That's my own take. But you're right. Like, there's something to that. Like, that's a very significant record that I think a lot of people thought would never be broken. And he has a good chance of breaking it. So it's a big deal, you know? I mean, I don't think Cal Ripken Jr. was like the greatest player. I think he was a really good player. But like, you know, it was really the fact that he had that long streak of games that made him live on in infamy, right? It wasn't the fact that...
But like Marleau also, like, made the Canadian Olympic team, like, more than once, right? And won gold medals. That stuff plays into that. You know, when you're talking about the best players in the league, that's who makes those teams, the best players in the league. And he was consistently on those Team Canadas.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a good point. I mean, obviously, I'm biased. I just... The body of work to play that long... That consistently, he had 44 goals one season. He's constantly, you know, hovering around 30 goals. Obviously, not this year. He's kind of dropped off a bit. But I think there's a case. Mm-hmm. I guess that's.
Oh,
that's
there's a case. I agree that there's a case. I think if I were voting between him and, you know, another guy who scored 50 goals, I'd probably take the guy that scored 50 goals. But like Danny Heagle, for example.
Versus 500. Jonathan Chichu.
Yeah, exactly.
The other big question about Marleau, John, is: do you think he goes one more year? Are we going to see him in Climate Pledge Arena playing against the Kraken?
Hard to say. I mean, I think he can still play. I think it depends on what the Sharks' outlook looks like. But the thing is, why? I don't know. If he really loves it, play. But
It would be cool. It would be awesome to see. I mean, he wouldn't obviously would do it just for the fans here in Seattle, but it would be cool to see him come and play a game here, an NHL game.
Yeah, and we should call out, like most people know that have been listening to the pod for a while, but it's not like we talk about it every week, so you might have missed it. But Patrick Marleau is a former Seattle Thunderbird, played in Key Arena, the arena formerly known as Key Arena, I guess.
Yep, under the roof.
So it would be really cool to see him here, obviously.
Our final weekly one-timer. Aaron Ekblad had a very gruesome looking injury in the Florida Panthers game this week. He went into a board and his ankle kind of like twisted under him. It was nasty. It was really,
yeah,
really gross.
Yeah.
They came on and gave him an air cast and took him off on a stretcher. He is going to miss significant time, but it sounds like it's not quite as bad as it maybe initially looked. Am I correct on that, John?
Yeah, I mean, they said 12 weeks, which is not
that's, I mean, it's a long injury, right?
That is obviously a long injury, but
serious,
you know,
damage there.
Yeah, but Tarasenko had shoulder surgery and was out like, you know, 4 months. So
yeah,
it's kind of one of those things that it looked much worse. Like, what will his comeback look like? You know, can he even be ready for the start of next season? I mean, it, mm-hmm, you know,
can he
some
play
of these
again?
Things. Yeah. Yeah. If you would have told me 12 weeks after I saw it, I'd be like, no chance. So, yeah. I mean, he could come back in the playoffs. I think that would be a stretch, but because it would be like at the tail end of the playoffs. But Florida's playing pretty good, but part of it is because of him.
Yeah.
So probably won't see him this year, but 12 weeks isn't too bad.
All right. We close the show with our tweets of the week. John, do you have a tweet of the week this week?
Yeah, it comes from Not Thrashers.
Uh-huh.
So it's
love
a,
that account. Yep.
Atlanta Thrashers
account.
Parody
account.
Yeah. And it's got a picture of a ship in a canal known as the Suez Canal. And which has been in the news. It says, should have said this ship was from Atlanta because the NHL would have done everything in its power to move it somewhere else.
Andy, your tweet of the week.
This week I'll be playing the part of John Barr, and I don't have a tweet of the week.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel shame. It just snuck up on me, and here we are.
Do you see what you've done, John? Do you understand what you've done by creating this precedent?
You know, I said last time we had a all recorded pod, I said, I'm going to work better. I'm going to do it. I'm going to work on it. Mm-hmm. And I did.
Yeah. Okay. So my tweet of the week comes from Kevin O'Neill, who is apparently a weatherman from Buffalo. His Twitter handle is @KevinBuffalo. It also claims in his Twitter profile that the Jim Carrey character on Bruce Almighty was actually him. Like, it was based on him. So, which I don't know if that's true or not, but he claims it is. So he had a tweet back on March 15th that said, I'm not shaving until the Sabres win. So then tonight he said, okay, here we go. A good 20 minutes away. And it's a picture of him holding up a can of shaving cream and a razor. And then about an hour later, it's the exact same picture of him, except he replaced the shaving cream and razor with just a bottle of booze because the Sabres lost again. And he still has his beard. And then he also had a tweet at one point that says, are you kidding me, Sabres? This gray beard is killing me. 18 losses in a row. This is a terrible idea. So poor Kevin O'Neill.
I watched that game on Monday. That was brutal how they lost because they actually had a pretty close opportunity to empty net and like just missed it. I think if they would have, the person who had the puck would have skated, you know, like another 5 feet, could have probably put it in. And it was brutal to watch. Like, because I was watching, I'm like, oh, they're going to end the streak. And then nope, they didn't. So that was brutal.
He also, as long as you were just talking about the Suez Canal, he also had a tweet here. It said, and basically I'm just reading this guy's Twitter at this point. Sabres about to win and turn this thing around 3-1 Buffalo. And the picture is the tiny little dredge trying to clear out the area around the Ever Given in the Suez Canal. That was the meme. So anyway, that's our show. Thank you, Kevin O'Neill, for letting me read your Twitter account for the last 15 minutes. Thank you to the three folks who wrote your 5-star reviews on iTunes. Please write your 5-star review on iTunes and we'll read it on the next episode. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Spotify, and we will talk to you all next week for episode 132. Yeah, cheers. Yeah, yeah, yeah.